You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening. Everyone.
We've got
Paula.
Great show on this evening. We've got Dick and Ann Barenbach sitting in for Tom Garcia, who did not make it in, unfortunately, this evening. Good evening, Dick and Ann. How are you?
Good evening, Laurie. How are you tonight? Or Paula, I'm sorry.
Okay.
We're both just fine.
Good. We've got a really good guest that we decided we'd bring back for everyone to meet again this evening. Her name is Laurie Farazenda, and she was rescued with one of her fellow inmates by the girl's family. Emaciated and suffering from the many injuries she'd received at the hands of her torturers, she arrived at the Iran Immigration Center with only one thought on her mind. She wrote a really good book about her want to come back to this country. She wanted to return home to this country. Even so, she had to fight Iranian bureaucracy to have permission to go. As the husband was unavailable to grant it, he too had disappeared. This is a true story about Laurie. She lived her young years as a victim of abuse, and as she grew older, she fell into a classic pattern of self-destructiveness. By the time she was 27, she was doing her utmost to create a sane life. Mohammed Farazenda seemed like a man she could trust and a man who would care for her and respect her. Although she knew he engaged in drug use, she ignored the warning signs and married him. 2 years later, he asked her to move to Iran, promising that she could pursue her career and assuring her that the country was quite modern. For 4 years, Laurie adjusted as best as she could to the oppressive customs of the land, but as her husband grew more demanding of her, he also became more violent. After the World Trade Center bombings, Mohammed told her they must leave Iran. He purchased bus tickets that he said would take them out of the country and eventually to America. But before they could escape, armed guards attacked and kidnapped her. Laurie was blindfolded and taken to a paramilitary POW camp somewhere in the hills. That's when the nightmare began, 6 weeks of horrific beatings, raping, torture, and starvation. And we have Laurie on the air with us this evening. Good evening, Laurie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. Mm.
So, yes, my book. I was with you guys, I think, back in April.
April. Mm-hmm.
I had an interview. My book. I'm trying, I guess, I haven't done a lot of, what do you call it, choreographed interviews. It's always been, you know, like impromptu. And I keep thinking, am I doing something wrong? Because after the interviews, I get offers to do TV interviews, but then nobody will come back and follow up on them. And I think the information in my book, it's not just to get me money or fame, because a lot of the proceeds go to charity, such as Amnesty International. But what I want to get out there is the information to educate people about laws overseas, their customs. I mean, if I'd have known what I know now, I never would have left. And also, I want to get, you know, subjects. There's many facets to this book. And like you said, the childhood sexual abuse, I think the more we talk about it, the more we can prevent it. And I've had a history of substance abuse as well, and we talk about that. So the book has a lot of information to get out there to people. And I just love to talk about it, but it seems like, I don't know if it's the political controversial, I mean, I don't know if that's the reason behind not getting interviews or not. But, I mean, I even got an offer from Barbara Walters, and then she never followed up on it. So I don't know what's going on.
Have you tried to contact Barbara Walters again?
I did for a couple times, but then I just gave up, kind of. Because I don't do these smut magazines or anything. I did a re-release of my press press release of my book in March stating that, you know, I've been through therapy for the last 8 years regarding this, so I think I'm ready to talk about it now. I'm actually ready. And it's important for me to get this information out to people. So I hope, you know, if anybody's out there that either wants to pick this book up and republish it with me, I'd be glad to do it because I own all rights to it. But it is important.
I haven't read your book. I'm going to get it and read it because just listening to what Paula was saying at the start of the show, it is super interesting. Now, I understand that you are an American and you married an Iranian?
Yes, that's right. I'm American, and I met Mohammed when I was going to college, and we met there and got married a couple years later. And then, of course, I've had problems, like I said, with substance abuse, and I've had other issues and problems. And I'm not trying to use that as an escape, but I did. And he offered to take me to Iran where I could make a new start, so to speak. And he told me that Iran was a very modern country there. You know, it wasn't like it used to be in 79 when they had the hostages and stuff. So when I got over there, the first thing I found out was you need your husband's written permission to leave the country. So I was kind of stuck there once I got there. And I just never thought that he would turn into the person he did. But one of the
even though you're married to an Iranian, you are an American. Couldn't the American consul help you?
They have nothing to do with Iran. They won't help. The only way I got help is once I got back to Dubai, United Arab Emirates, where there is a USA embassy. But no, once you're in Iran and you're married to an Iranian, they consider you just an Iranian citizen, and there's nothing that the U.S. can do to get you out.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know,
What is your impression of how the United States is trying to get friendly with Iran?
That they are? I haven't really read up on the news or anything, but I think they shouldn't trust them at all. I mean, after what I went through, and I thought I was in love with somebody and I thought I could trust them, why would anybody choose to trust a country like that that's repeatedly threatened us over and over again? You know, there's death to Amerika graffiti all over the buildings in Tehran. And that's one thing I noticed when I got over there. They hang women publicly by a construction crane if they cheat on their husbands, or even if they just want to accuse them of that. And I saw that happen. And Iran considers the compassionate thing to do when they hang a woman is to allow her mother to walk her up to the noose and spend 5 minutes with her. That's what they consider compassionate. So, I mean, I would not trust a country like that.
It's not really a country we want to have much to do with.
No.
Obviously, they're not going to listen to what we feel should be done.
Oh, no.
And they call us barbarians because we give lethal injections in some states. However, here we have Iran. They also use stoning as punishment, don't they?
Yes, they do. They'll bury the woman up to her head and stone her. Yeah, they do that. I didn't witness that, but I did witness public hangings. And they do it in a public, I mean, place where they encourage people to come watch it, even the little kids, because they think it's a lesson everybody, you know, should learn. And
it sounds like our country when we were first settling it and moving west. Public hangings were a public affair that everybody went to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, it still happens over here. Yes.
This is so hard for me to believe, but I know it's got to be true. I can't imagine a country being that cruel. that the people would not try and overthrow their government and make a change.
They try, but it's like you get so, to me even, when I went to Iran, I wasn't a Muslim, and I had to become one after I married him. It is,
right.
I guess it's so easy, and I hate to say this, to get brainwashed into believing what they believe when you've got, like, my husband, when we got there, all of his family started yelling at him and, you know, gathering around him, telling him he had an outspoken wife. And he had all that pressure from his family. I'm not giving him an excuse, but that really changed him a lot, you know, because he had to create an example because he was now the head of the family because his father had died. So
right.
You really got to...
Americans are brought up under a different culture. Women in countries like Iran are more of a piece of property to be owned
mm-hmm.
rather than another living person.
Exactly.
And for that reason, if you were to conduct yourself like you would in America, you are really stepping out of line in Iran.
Exactly.
Like they say, you're being very outspoken.
Mm-hmm. And I used to teach English. When I was over there, I taught English to girls, and they still contact me on the Internet. But I was a teacher for 3 years until one of my students, Layla, was drowned in her father's swimming pool for not being a virgin on her wedding night. And the way that they check that is the mother-in-law will be outside the door, and if there's no blood on the sheets, then she's not considered a virgin.
They don't know much about human anatomy, do they?
No, they don't. And I mean, I've
and
heard all kinds of
stories. They probably don't care.
No, they don't. You know, they're so manipulative. I mean, I'm not a master at recognizing people, but oh my goodness, my husband was so manipulative. Their whole country is, you know, they can just get you to buy into anything almost. I mean, he was starting over here. When I got over there, I found out he was a state-sponsored terrorist. He actually would kill Iranian war vets so the government wouldn't have to deal with them. I met President Khatami. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had really close ties with President Khatami.
Yes.
And I just couldn't believe it, you know, when I got over there, what I was, you know, getting into.
Okay. You were arrested and taken off to their prison. What happened to your husband?
Well, the day after 9/11, also I had heard rumors that something was going to happen. We didn't know where it was going to happen or what was going to happen, but something was on 9/11 because that was our distress call. And I really didn't know for sure what happened until I got back to America. But I tried to call home on the 9th, 10th, and 11th to at least warn my family. And the operator said no international calls being placed at this time. So you couldn't even get a line out of the country to call home. But the day after 9/11, my husband told me, we have to get a bus to Istanbul, and then from there we'll go to London and get out of, you know, the Middle East. Because he was afraid of repercussions that might take place on the Middle East for what happened on 9/11. So, I mean, I think he knew everything and just wasn't telling me. And when we got to Shiraz bus station, we showed our passports. He had had my American passport. He had it all the time, and he showed it. Plus, he's got multiple identities, but he showed his. I don't know which one. And about as soon as we got outside to sit beside our luggage, and I'm still emotional over this, I'm sorry, they pulled up like in cattle trucks, and they blindfolded me and took me one way, and they had taken him another way. And I still have never seen him again. I've had death threats from him, and he's tried to call, but I contact Homeland Security, and they accidentally let him back in this country in February of 2010. Okay. They told me he was on a no-fly list back in 2001. Well, when I found out he was in jail up in Marquette, I called up there and talked to Homeland Security at the Canadian, I think she was at the Canadian border, American border, and she mm-hmm. told me there was nothing they could do. It was an accident or papers got mixed up or something. But but this is the line Homeland Security gave me, and that I'm supposed to contact him if he contacts me. Well, I've been doing that, and they don't do anything. He's got multiple identities. They know that, too. There's proof of it. When he got his citizenship to come in this country, he lied about the name he was using, and Homeland Security keeps telling me there's nothing they can do about that. I mean,
Have you attempted to contact the FBI?
Yes. You know, I've written to government, to my legislators, to senators, everybody. Since I got back on November 14th, 2001, the first thing that happened was there was somebody at the Detroit airport interviewing me who apparently they said it was Christina Amanpour on the other end of the line, and that's who they were interviewing me for. I never got to talk to the person on the other line, so I just answered their questions. And when I got home, I weighed 70 pounds. I had traumatic brain injury. All my teeth were knocked out. My sister didn't recognize me when she saw me because it was just... Anyway, getting back, I get flustered and confused, so please try to keep me on some organizational structure here. But, if it hadn't been for the Sheikh of Dubai, there was an incident in the camp. They used to give us heroin injections into our gums so that we would be quiet when they publicly raped them. And there was one incident where a girl got an overdose, and Nasreen was her name, and she was dying, and she gave me her ring before she died. It wasn't an expensive ring. It was a silver one. And she gave it to me. She knew she was dying. And, you know, this, and they didn't care. You know, once she was dead, oh, well, just take her and get her out of here. You know, they would execute people right and left there. This one father and mother were yelling at this guard. The father was saying, please take me, because I guess they were going to take his son and execute him. And the father kept saying, take me. Well, they took all three of them outside the camp, and we could hear gunshots. And the only people that returned was the mother and father. So they must have killed him right in front of them.
Yes, sounds like it. Let me ask you a question. Since I got involved in Tea Party and 9/12 groups and looking at the foreign countries and what they're trying to do to our country, you said you met him while you were still in college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Michigan.
What role do you think college had in your feelings on foreign countries? Let me tell you what I'm looking at.
Okay.
The different colleges I have gone to listen to speakers,
mm-hmm.
It seems like an awful lot of the younger people that are in college today are pretty much brainwashed and have no idea what's going on. They're listening to the press, and they're listening to professors that are actually helping brainwash them.
Exactly. I agree with that because we, not just Middle Eastern people, but just anybody of a different race, they would always go overboard trying to tell you that this ethnic group or whatever were good. They never told you the bad things. It was just the good things and how you shouldn't be prejudiced. And, you know, they did. They taught
mm-hmm.
you the good things. They told us that we should learn the Quran so we would better understand them, which I don't understand why they would say that. But, yeah, there was a professor up there, too, that taught cross-cultural studies, and he was from Lebanon. And the way he talked about his country and the countries in the Middle East, it was like they were the greatest places around, they're tolerant, and our country is so rigid and... It just, you know, I know what you're saying. I just can't express what I want
right.
to, but, yeah, it's definitely like that. Definitely.
I really have a lot of sympathy for the people going through college today and within the past, I would say, 8 to 10 years
mm-hmm.
because they don't really know what is going on in this world. And
yeah.
when they find out, it could be too late.
Exactly.
They could all be living.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
They could all be living under Iranian rule, Muslim rule, whatever, and following their laws, whether they like it or not. And
exactly.
As you well know, they have no respect for life. If you don't like somebody, if they don't agree with you, you just shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
Or hang them, or whatever you desire to do with them to get rid of them.
And I hate to say this, but percentage-wise, most Iranian, this isn't a hate Muslim type book. That's not what it was. There's many Muslims over there that I really admire. But for the majority of them, they're fanatics. I don't think you're going to change the way that they behave or act towards Americans. And it's just so predominant over there that when you do try to speak out, even if you have a bunch of people following you saying, yeah, let's go speak out about it, it all goes to hell the first time somebody speaks out because nobody will back them up. It's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's just they're so brainwashed in Iran, and they think America is so bad and that we're out to, you know, destroy the world with our nuclear weapons. And they say that they're only building theirs to defend their country against ours. I mean, I was over there teaching English, and I made the mistake of mentioning Jesus from the Bible and trying to explain. They do acknowledge Jesus in the Quran, but not as a prophet. And they came in and were going to take me to prison for doing that. The guards came in. And the principal of the school came and talked to the guards to let them know, you know, this is not what my intention was, to get them to turn against Islam. So, you know, by the grace of God, I didn't go to prison. But that's how easy it is to get taken away there. Just saying the wrong word, mentioning the wrong, you know, Bible passage or anything. You don't do that. And you cannot, you absolutely cannot say anything bad about the president of Iran or you will be jailed.
Right. It's obviously we have an awful lot of Iranians in this country, and we're getting more, seems like, on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, all of them are not what you would classify as nice people.
No, they're
some
not.
Of them want to use us for the education they can get, and some are over here just to find a way to terrorize the people within this country and make our country fall apart. And
yeah,
it may sound cruel, but if you look back in history, now don't get me wrong, I'm not a warmonger.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe in wholesale slaughter. But at certain times, you have to bring a country down to its knees to change it. We showed that with Germany. We showed that with Japan.
Mm-hmm.
An awful lot of very innocent, decent people died in those wars. I'm talking citizens of the countries because of their leaders. But look at the changes it made. And you can't look at a person and say, this person is bad, he's going to try and hurt us. Or this person is good and will practice his religion and he's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can't look at a person and decide that. As much as they talk about us profiling, you can't tell what is in the mind and what the person is thinking.
No,
as you found out with your husband and how he fooled you.
Yeah, and they're so well trained, I guess, and educated over there about sacrifices, about jihad, about Sharia law, and how you must follow it. And if you come to America, well, see, my husband had an immigration consulting business. We did. And what I didn't know at the time is people would come apply for their visas through us. Either they'd try to apply for a student visa, or I forget what the other one was called, but they would fill out the application, and my husband would take it to Damascus for processing. But what I didn't know is when he went to Damascus with these, he actually was paying people over there to get these visas approved. I don't know how many false visas were given to people of Iranian descent so they could move to Canada. Maybe that's why Homeland Security won't deal with me, because it was, you know, all the, they're overlooking it because most of the immigrants he got the false visas for went to Canada. But he definitely did it. We had business cards. I got that in my book. It was called Can Consults Immigration. And rich people would come and pay to have their kids' visas approved. And it wasn't just him. It was people at the Damascus, Syria end, too, that were helping these visas get approved just with a little money, or should I say a lot. So people, you know, you just can't keep people out of this country. I mean, you can't look at them and say, okay, they have a verified visa. Those visas are just as accurate looking as the ones that we have. I mean, there's, and they're authorized by the people that the normal ones are sent away for. I don't know how many false visas he got for people to come to Canada, but quite a few.
What do you think is the answer? How should we be handling Iran? What should we do with the people that are here from the country and those that want to come here?
Oh, you don't want my opinion. My opinion is keep them out. Keep them out and send the ones here that don't have their citizenship yet, let them go back home. That's my, but it could be, I mean, it's not could be. It is my anger, because for so long I didn't have any anger towards these people. Even when I got home, I thought, well, at least they let me live. And, you know, now it's just starting to make sense that all we're going to do is help Iran invade us with passports. They're going to have their citizens get visas and stuff, and they're going to be invading America. And pretty soon it won't take Iran to come over here to start a war with America. It'll start within America on its own, because we'll be outpopulated. I mean, maybe that's going to an extreme, but I don't think we should allow people over here. They're not using it for the appropriate measures. I mean, and our government doesn't do anything when they catch the people. My husband, I'm sure, agreed to talk to them about terrorist connections he had over there, and that's probably why he got to stay here. Because I just find it real funny Homeland Security wouldn't do anything about him. And I never have gotten anything back from the government. You know, if they don't like the book or they think the book's a lie or whatever, why didn't they contact me and say that? They just keep ignoring me. And it's like...
Okay, let me try and explain. I'm sure you probably understand this already. I am a retired police officer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My last 5 years, I was assigned to the FBI in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And at times, you have to work with people that you would just as soon put a bullet in their head, because they have information that you need so that you can go after somebody bigger than them.
Right.
And although it turns your stomach to have to do it, you're constantly going back to this person saying, okay, where can I find so-and-so, or who was doing this, or who was doing that? And you have to work with this person. That could be the stage that they have. Are you divorced from your husband now, or?
Yeah, when I got back, all I had to do was tell a judge about what happened, and they granted it.
Okay. That's probably what's going on with your ex-husband right now. They could be using him for information so they can find out what else is going on and who is behind it, who is coming up on the ladder that they have to watch, stuff like this. He's an informant for him.
Right. Well, he used to work for DEA. He used to be undercover DEA in Bay City, Midland. Wherever we lived, he seemed to be like a snitch.
He wouldn't be a DEA agent.
No, not DEA.
He would be a snitch for the DEA.
Yeah, that. He used to work with organizations like KVET and Bayonet. And at the time, you know, he had a used car dealership. And at the time, I didn't know this, they would purchase these 92 through 95 Caprice Classics, these cars. He kept telling me, oh, they need them overseas because, you know, they're so nice. But turns out there was something, some flaw where there was a really good hiding place in those cars, and they would ship a lot of things over there to Iran in these cars.
Oh,
at least that's what I was told.
Sure.
And then when he would come back here, he would bring heroin, and he even put it in his baby's stroller, the legs that go down on the stroller. He'd pack that full of heroin and let his wife walk it through the airport. So if she got caught, he wouldn't be involved.
Sure.
I mean, we had money. I mean, he claimed he was related to the Shah, and we lived very nice over there. And it's just like he would go to these conferences. He didn't encourage me to learn Farsi because you really don't have to over there because so many people want to learn English. And I guess I was the perfect English teacher because I didn't know that much Farsi. So they had to learn, raw English. And he didn't want me to know it. And they all talked English within the household and all of his friends. And he would go to these places, like he'd go to people's houses and talk to people. Like a lot of people would gather there and he'd talk. Or we'd take the bus, to Isfahan, which is another city, and he would speak there to people, like in auditoriums and stuff. And I never got to go with him. I would go with him, but he'd stick me in a hotel. Like when we went to Tehran, he'd say, okay, he'd put me up at the nicest hotel, which obviously had cable, and I could see, actually watch American shows. And he would tell the people at the hotel to keep me busy. And when I was at the Lali Hotel in Tehran is when I met President Hadamy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He actually came in our hotel room. I had to leave then, but I was thinking, why would a president want to come and meet with Mohammed in a hotel room? And it's just not customary for somebody to come up there and want to be in the same hotel as a husband and wife are, even to speak. So Mohammed sent me down to the lobby, and then him and President Hadamy, I guess they were up there for like an hour.
I would take a wild guess and say that your husband was working with the country to recruit terrorists?
Oh, I have no doubt about it. There's so much I look back on now that makes sense when then I just wanted to overlook it or say, no, I'm interpreting this wrong. It's just unbelievable. And that's what makes me so angry that he got away with doing all that and getting people fake visas. And then Homeland Security doesn't do a thing to them because they want, like you said, somebody higher up on the chain. And
Is there anything that anybody's doing for your safety?
Oh, no. Well, this lady from Homeland Security, Elaine, I think her name is, told me if I got any death threats or anything, just forward the emails to her and contact them. Well, I do, but I never get a reply. I've called and left messages at their office because I felt I didn't feel real safe. Let's put it that way.
No kidding.
And it's like, because
he
wasn't just a barbaric person, as far as, to other people, but what he did to me over there and then wouldn't let me come home, he actually sold me for drugs to this guy for a weekend, and he kept me so doped up, and it was for a drug deal or something, and I write about it in my book, and I thank God I thought I knew this person, when I was in the United States, and then to come over here and have him, beat me, and then on top of it, sell me to his buddies for the weekend, it was, it's
well,
just
while
so
you're here, while you're in this country, he has to play the American game.
Exactly.
If he doesn't play the game, he gets deported, he loses his visa, he loses everything else he's got.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the messages that you need to get out in this book is for young woman in college to
mm-hmm.
beware. There, as Islam, they're allowed to lie about anything to further Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Beware, don't trust, and do not believe that anywhere you go, you're going to be treated as an American.
Nope.
I think that's the tolerance of other religions, and I'm going to get it for this, and races, is too much here.
Mm-hmm.
We do that normally as a people, are tolerant. And the other side of that is for our own people, we're more racist and against our own people than we are the people that are actually coming in here trying to destroy us.
Right.
This is the message we need to get across to America with your kind of story. This is what they do. They brainwash you, and then they'll take you back, and this is what happens. Beware.
Yeah,
Paula, what are your thoughts?
I'm sorry?
What are your thoughts, Paula?
She might be...
No, I'm here. I'm listening.
Wake you up?
I was shocked the first time around that I heard her story, and I'm still shocked now. And you know, I'm wondering what it is you're doing to cope in try to get through the days and get your story heard. And you know, you had mentioned that you're trying to get the book republished, and I'm hoping that by doing you know this show again and hopefully you know using social media and whatnot, we can get your story out there and we can get somebody to pick it up and you know republish your book.
Yes, because well,
I think it's tremendously important now that there are so many groups that are pro-Islam now mm-hmm. here, and especially with a president that's basically currying favor with all of the Middle Eastern countries. And I'm going to go out on a limb here. I do not believe the man is a Christian. I do believe he's still a Muslim.
Who's that?
Our President Obama.
Well, he is a Muslim. There's no doubt about it.
Well, that's the point that I feel needs to get across with these kind of stories.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a lot of the Muslim faith through the whole thing. And once a Muslim, always a Muslim. You must listen with different kind of ears
mm-hmm.
because of the lies and whatever they do to further their own agenda, not American agenda. And this is what people don't understand here. They take people at face value, and you cannot do that.
I have never read the Quran. I've heard a lot about it. Apparently there are two versions of the Quran, one that was written at a later date by people that wanted to change things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand any people that will buy a story that if you wire yourself up with a bomb and go out and blow up a whole bunch of people, Allah is going to bless you and accept you into his house. Go
yeah.
out and kill yourself and kill other people. Allah wants you to do this.
Mm-hmm.
My first question to them would be, well, don't you want to be with Allah? You're telling all these other people to blow themselves up, but you're not
right.
blowing yourself up.
Right.
What have you got against Allah?
Good point.
Of course,
sure,
about
I
that
guess.
Time, they'd be taken out back and shot without any ceremony. But they don't even think about this, that all these other people are saying, you go do it, you go do it.
Right. And they're taught from birth, okay, basically. But I was around Muhammad's family and his nephews, and they just have it drilled into their head that if they're able to be a sacrifice or martyr themselves for the sake of Allah, then that's the greatest gift they can give their family and the family's reputation.
Mm-hmm.
It's mandatory.
It's a heck of a way for birth control, I think. I just
Do you know much about America? Well, being American, you should. You know who General George Patton is?
Yeah.
General George Patton had a famous saying. It's not about dying for your country. It's about making the other poor SOB die for his. And that is just the opposite of what they're telling their own people. It's better if you go out and die for your country. No, no. Make the other people die for their country.
Right.
Now, be careful they don't start understanding that.
You had touched on that just a little bit, Lori, and I was going to comment, but we got off on another subject about causing problems within this country.
Mm-hmm.
Our politicians are fat, lazy, and sassy. They don't deserve to be where they are. I would like to pack 99.9% of them up and ship them over to Iran and let them find out what's really going on in the world and leave them there without any way to get back to our country. But the general people in this country, if it gets nasty enough, you do not want to see what's going to happen. It will not be pretty because they will start shooting anybody that even looks like they are Muslim or they have any Muslim blood. They will shoot them just on appearances.
If it gets to that.
And that will be, that'll be a disaster because a lot of innocent, decent people are going to die. But the people in this country are what they call rednecks. We have our freedom, we have our lives, and if somebody else is going to come over and take it over and start causing terror here, I got my rifle and I'm good at it. I know how to use it. That's just the way they feel. And they will drive around the cities, and anybody that looks like Muslim, Iranian, anything, they will be dead. They'll shoot them. Just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's almost like
but they don't understand that about us over in Iran. That is our, that's our culture. Our culture is to survive.
Mm-hmm.
We took on the biggest country with the mightiest military in the world at the time, and we had nothing but squirrel guns, and we kicked their butts.
Well,
we'll do it again.
I hope so. It's sad, but we are contributing to our own demise by allowing so many Iranians or whoever from the Middle East, or not even just the Middle East, but to come to this country and grant them citizenship and give them the same rights as Americans have. I was told that just because Muhammad was a naturalized citizen, he had to be treated the same as any American and be afforded all the law, or what do you call the same justice.
Rights of the Constitution?
Yeah, and I'm like, he lied to get that visa, though, or to get that citizenship. He gave him a false spelling of his last name, and then when he went to the Social Security, he had the correct spelling on that, but when he went to the Social Security, he changed the spelling so he could get another identity and another nickname. And he went to Nick from being Muhammad. And they say, well, he's a citizen now. There's nothing much we could do.
Hmm.
Well, why is that? Well, why can't you?
Unfortunately, it's not the people in this country that is allowing this. It is the present form of government we have and the leaders that are in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say this because there's... But it's basically the Democratic Party. There are some Republicans that are involved in this, but the Democratic Party wants the votes, and to get the votes, they want to infiltrate the country with poor people, people that will vote them into office and keep them in office so they can keep their power. That's why this is being allowed in this country. It's not the people. If you took a vote of the people in this country, you would find that 99.9% of them want them out of this country, and they don't care if they're sent out on a leaky boat. And they don't want them back in.
Right.
And I am one of those.
Yeah, I never thought that I would be like that, but when you see it firsthand happening in front of you and how manipulative people can be and I don't know how they can just change at the drop of a hat. I don't want to live in this country.
We are all foreigners to this country unless you're a Native American. All of our forefathers came over at one time or another. But when they came over, they left their mother country, their home country, behind. This was now their country, and they swore allegiance to this country and what this country stood for.
Mm-hmm.
And unless anybody coming into the country today is willing to do the same thing and is willing to support themselves and not rely on the government for support, then they shouldn't be allowed in the country.
Exactly.
Swear allegiance to this country or don't even come in.
Mm-hmm. It would
There's
be
a lot of
so
other countries
nice.
In the world you can go to. We don't need you.
Yep. It would be so nice if it was that simplistic.
But,
I mean, if people would do that.
Yeah. But please don't look at the American people and think that we are allowing this, because we would stop it in a second if we could.
No,
when
I said
the time comes, we will stop it.
Right. I meant like our government is. And it's just so frustrating because I've tried so hard to educate them and, you know, write letters and tell them what was going on. There were still Americans in that camp over there. If you will look in the archives of, there was a Black Hawk helicopter that crashed over there near where we were at in mid-October. And we were told that they were coming in to look for us to see if there was actually these camps. And it had crashed, and they had celebrated so much that night, you know, about the helicopter. But you can research it. It happened over there in October of 2001. And we were in that camp from September 12th until the end of October.
Sure.
And it's like when I finally escaped that camp with Farush, when I actually got to the USA Embassy in Dubai, and they were going to pay my way home, they made me sign a non-disclosure agreement stating I wouldn't talk about anything that happened over there. That was the only way they'd pay my way home. Of course, when I got home, I talked because we got freedom of speech. But it's like what you think
what,
you do.
What they're doing there is the government is, as we used to say in police work, covering their own behinds.
Okay.
They don't want your story to get out and let the people know what's really going on. Okay, we're going to help you, but you keep your mouth shut. Don't you tell anybody what really happened over there, because we're trying to work deals out with them. I'm sorry, the only deal you should work out with them is a missile right in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
And
I
you say, now
agree.
You change your ways, or we send another missile over and take off another corner of your country.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, have you contacted Brigitte Gabrielle with Act for America?
Mm.
She's someone that might be able to help. I've also got a book here, Unveiling Islam. I'm sorry about the pronunciation. Ergun Mehmet Kaner and Emir Fethi Kaner. Anyway, basically, they were Islam, converted to Christianity, and became preachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if any Brigitte Gabrielle is with Act for America, trying to wake up America as to what Islam is doing to our country. And I'm wondering if somebody from maybe this book or Brigitte can possibly help further your story. It sounds like something that they would welcome to me.
That would be wonderful. I mean, there's just
Have you heard of those people?
Actually, no. The book I've heard of.
What I will do after the show's over, I will send you an email with some of their information.
Okay.
And hopefully it'll give you a way to contact them and see if maybe they can assist you in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, that would be wonderful. That'd be wonderful.
Because this is another piece of the story that it's like you have to get all these pieces together. And I'm thinking Brigitte Gabrielle might be very interested in your story. And getting that out. She's in, well, I think she's down here in Florida, isn't she?
I'm not sure. I'll have to look at her information.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do in that vein. Those are the only two thoughts that I do have. And I will contact some people from Afrom America and see if they have any other ideas. That would be good.
How are you going about looking for a new company to print your book?
Right now, all I'm doing is putting it out there on the Internet. I self-published because at the time, the publishers that wanted to edit so much out of it. And so I self-published, and that's what I guess was wrong. I should have never self-published because it's so hard to market the book. And now I'm just looking for any publisher that might want a reputable one, that might want to take the book over and republish it and get it out there to the right people.
I have talked to a number of people that have written books, and a few of them have had troubles with the publisher, and they are out looking for new publishers. I think what I might be able to do is also come up with some reputable publishers that you might try and contact to see if you can get results from them.
Oh, that'd be great.
There are good publishers out there. It's just how to find them, and the best way to find them is by the people that have used them.
Mm-hmm.
Get their information. How did this publisher treat you? Did they print the book the way you wanted it printed? Or did they tell you how to write the book?
Right. Well, I got all rights to my book. I own all the rights to it. So there's no publishing or press company out there that could give anybody a hard time if I chose to do that. But it's just so hard to get the information out there with such limited means, you know. And this is, of course, I'm a first-time writer. But the book has won an award already. It's gotten 5-star reviews, including from the Midwest Book Review.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I don't understand. It's out there. It's on Amazon. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. If any listeners out there have any ideas how they can help Lori out, you can go to her website, and I'm sure you can find a way to contact her from her website, can't they?
Yes, sure. And
could you give us your website?
I'm sorry. It's www.loris, L-O-R-I-S, dash, song, S-O-N-G, .com. And it's loris, L-O-R-I-S, dash, song, .com.
And if you also look at this website, you will see it posted in our archives. But if any of you have any ideas about good book publishers that could help her out, or anybody that is familiar with the problems in Iran that would be willing to tell things as they are, maybe you can let her know about it.
You've also got a Facebook page, Lori.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Lori's Song.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go there and click on like.
Yeah. I've got a Twitter account. I've got everything. I've tried as much as I can through the Internet. It's like every day I spend an hour trying to promote the book somehow. And it's getting so frustrating why it's like nobody sees it, nobody hears it. I don't get any type of response, even a bad response. All I get are the reviews and an award.
Don't be discouraged. It takes time. And when it takes off, it's going to take off with blinding speed, believe me.
Oh,
I hope
so.
But it does take time. Look at it like an actor or an actress out in California. You can be in the business for 10, 15 years, and you get nowhere.
Yeah.
And then you get in one bit movie, and somebody looks at it and says, wow. And the next thing you know, you're on your way, and you're the number one draw at the box office. But it has taken a long time to get there.
Oh, that's true.
And it's the same way with the different people that I've talked to that have written books. John Casey wrote Cold Sun, fantastic book. He's also having a rough time getting a lot of people to buy the book.
Mm-hmm.
There's other people that, who writes about the Jewish ones, Ann? Help me out here.
Okay, Jerry Honigman.
Yeah, Jerry Honigman. He wrote his book, and he has a rough time selling his. It just hasn't gotten to the right people yet.
Well, and that's where you have to be careful with the publisher. After all is said and done, he makes a whole $1.37 a book that's sold.
I make $2.
I don't think that's true. Oh, well, see, now you've got him beat. Would
yep.
he?
Well, Lori, thank you for coming on for the show tonight. We're going to have to wrap it up.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I will try and email you and get you some information that hopefully is going to help you out.
Well, thank you so much.
It was good to
You're welcome. Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
Yes. You.
Paula, that's a very sad story.
It is, but it's, you know, it needs to be told, it needs to be heard, and we need to ensure that we, you know, remind people and keep the story out there. Social media is a big thing, and there shouldn't be any reason why somebody can't pick up the story and you know, do a nice television piece on it or you know, a live on-air radio piece for that matter and help her get her book published.
Right. Unfortunately, I'm getting the impression that we're losing Fox News as far as helping our cause.
Really?
Yeah.
Glenn Beck left because they were trying to restrict what information he was putting out. They just got too restrictive for him, and he couldn't do it anymore.
Wow.
Are you familiar with the voting fraud case in Indiana?
No, I don't believe I've heard of that.
That just came out last night.
It just came out. It came out on Fox News, and then Fox News pulled it. What happened is a junior student at the University of Indiana did some research and found out there was an awful lot of voter fraud and Obama should not have been allowed on the ticket.
Oh, my goodness.
So, of course, one little probe from Fox is all you're going to get.
It is on YouTube. I pulled it down into my favorites. I will have to send it to you so you can look at it.
Yeah.
But it's something that looks like they want to hush up very quickly, and Fox News bent for them and pulled it off the air.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should try to see if we can get a hold of him, that guy.
Yeah. So, well, in the tradition of that great man, Tom Garcia, Paula, why don't you have the last word?
Well, just a shout out to our troops overseas. Your families love and miss you dearly, and they want you home real soon. Dick and Ann, I want to thank you so much for, you know, taking the time out of a nice quiet evening that you have at home for helping me out with this and for getting Lori back on the show and putting her story out there. It is greatly appreciated. And, you know, hope to talk to you again next week.
It was my pleasure to do it.
Yes.
Anything I can do to help you and Tom out and the people that are trying to get their message out, I'll do it.
Thank you very much. And you both have a great night, and everybody have a great night and a great rest of your week. And we hope to talk to you again real soon.
Yes. Good night, Paula.
Good night, all.
Paula.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.